Chris, we'll start with you. Then after Chris, Elizabeth, if you'd want to follow, and then Jake. So, Chris.
Okay, today we're probably thinking about the new year before us, but I want to look back in time for a moment to a time when a gallon of gas cost about 44 cents. A new Ford Mustang II would cost you $4,100. Bill Gates and Paul Allen start a company called Microsoft. The war in Vietnam finally ends as Communist North forces take Saigon. Sony releases Betamax, video cassette recorder. Ultimately, Sony would lose the format war to VHS. David Bowie records number one hit, Fame. Earth, Wind, and Fire record Shining Star. Tiger Woods and Angelina Jolie are born. And a hippie couple in Northwest Indiana find out they're going to have a baby too, my parents. More about that in a minute. Okay, anybody want to guess the year? Very good. 75. So Mom was told that she wouldn't be able to have children. So it was a surprise. This expecting couple were motivated at that point to get religion. They stopped doing drugs and tied the knot and began a new life in a way of his parents before him as Seventh-day Adventists. So a few years later, my dad was recruited to work in Columbus, Ohio. I had a baby sister by this time. The four of us moved, and this is where my religious memory begins, about kindergarten age. I remember that we never ate meat. This was unholy. Mom and other women wore no makeup nor jewelry. My parents, for example, exchanged wedding Bibles, not rings. We were not to indulge in things like television or radio on the Sabbath, which was sundown Friday until sundown Saturday. When we did watch TV, only select Christian programs were approved. Sesame Street, for example, was banned because the puppets were sometimes shown playing rock music. I also remember watching men from our congregation meet in a side room to practice a ritual of humility and servitude by washing each other's feet as our Lord washed the feet of his disciples. Mothers within our community seem to share an identical system of values. We're not hesitant to step in for each other, providing correction as needed on the spot. I remember seeming devout. Service and obedience were very important. We were to align our behavior with examples set by Jesus. I remember being told that the world was significantly evil and disobedient. And I remember attending my first funeral. Pastor Shelsky fell from an extension ladder while cleaning windows. This caused an awareness of death for me, and my mother wisely seized the opportunity just in front of the casket to inform me about the afterlife and our choice between judgment or bliss. Sometimes I'm a little bit wistful about those days. There was definitely unity in our church, perhaps to a fault. I think we were probably guilty of elevating secondary or tertiary issues beyond their due. We do want to be obedient, even in the small things. I'm not saying anything is unimportant. Hopefully everybody knows that we risk kind of trivializing some of the really important aspects of faith when non-essentials are kind of aggrandized. But I'm not sure I want to dismiss the whole approach. On one hand, we don't have to look far to see that social pressure is definitely abused, especially in certain places of the world. On the other hand, when many or most in the group are spiritual and obedient, social pressure might be a good thing to keep its members in line. I wonder if fear of embarrassment even could be a healthy motivator at some time. Well, Dad got a new job, and we moved to Valparaiso when I was in about second grade. I got another little sister at that time. We began to attend church on Sunday. I recall having a family meeting. Mom and Dad explained that the day we go to church wasn't really important, just that we go. In our new church and attached church school, we learned about how awesome and powerful God is, and that we too could be powerful. In fact, how much faith we have affects what can happen in life. For those with really strong faith, even God is compelled to give us that for which we ask, and he wills us to be prosperous. In our new home, we were not allowed to say, I feel like I'm getting sick, or you scared me to death, because our words have power to cause reality. For example, I'm going to feel healthy today was the prescribed positive incantation when one feels a fever or nausea coming on. We went to church at least 3 times a week, more often when major revivals were televised. Mom and Dad invested heavily toward their own prosperity by sending checks to the likes of Robert Tilton and counting on the promised tenfold return to pay bills. Eventually, Robert Tilton and other Word of Faith televangelists were exposed, but not before our own pastor was charged and convicted of embezzlement. Dad landed a new job in East Lansing, Michigan. We moved and settled into a somewhat charismatic, non-denominational church with a more balanced and less heretical view of faith and prosperity. The spiritual drama in my story takes an intermission here. We enjoyed life as an acceptable Christian family in the middle of American nominalism. We were average, perhaps indifferent. During and after high school, now in Bluffton, we held to our Christian faith. However, things cooled off a little bit. We went to a tolerable church most Sundays, gave an offering, and followed the expected pattern. We weren't not Christians. On my own, I began to ponder the meaning of life, things like my place in the universe, the trustworthiness of the faith handed down from my parents and my parents' parents. Where do you start with answering those questions? There are many religions. How can I be sure mine is true? Could other roads lead to God? How could I be sure there's really a God out there at all, or even if reality is as it seems? Perhaps life is an illusion. As time went on, I could think of little else. Internal pep talks and first-party reassurances became inadequate. I started to get worried and ended up feeling depressed. I seemed to find multiple answers for every question, and I wasn't sure there was any way to sort them out. Around the same time, I met Ruth Mangus's cousin, Chris, called Monty, because he's from Montana, and we became best friends and roommates. We had several friends in our circle who attended the Vineyard Church, so we started going. To me, there was kind of a Word of Faith smell. The Vineyard movement was exactly the same thing as I had experienced at a younger age, and I understand that the denomination has taken steps since to distance itself from the so-called Toronto Blessing, where things got a little bit out of hand. And the movement is somewhat multifaceted as well, so not every Vineyard church is exactly the same, but it wasn't a good fit for me or for Monty. We enjoyed some very deep friendships with some of its members, however, and this would prove pivotal in my search for God. Monty and I were involved in the local music scene at the time, and we were busy organizing a Christian summer music festival at Headwaters Park called Believe 97. We were really excited, but I just couldn't shake off the depression and doubt. A couple of my Vineyard friends lovingly pressed me to level with them about my anxiety. They weren't really prepared to give me the answers I was desperately searching for, but they hosted a prayer meeting in their home. Monty, the couple, and a few others asked the Lord to reveal himself in a clear and mighty way by the date of the Believe Festival. I hoped with all the faith I could muster that God was there and heard the prayers of my friends. I felt at the time, if anything, it was more their God than mine. I was looking maybe on from outside the circle of belief a little bit. So Believe 97 was a runaway success. The best local Christian rock bands and funk bands and techno artists jammed for almost 12 hours that day. There was dancing and a lot of food and ministry, but no burning crosses could be seen in the sky, nor did I hear an audible voice from God. On the bright side, I was introduced to a new friend, Kevin, who was looking to sell a pretty good set of turntables and a mixer. I was getting into the underground dance scene and made arrangements to meet Kevin the next day to buy his gear. I wanted to learn how to DJ. Kevin turned out to be kind of a weird guy. When I showed up at his apartment, he was listening to AM radio. I asked him what was up with this kind of old-sounding guy talking about the Bible. He said, "It's the Bible Answer Man. You should listen to 1090. He's pretty good." I did, and he was. In short order, the faith of my parents had a foundation. Life began to have meaning. God heard my friends' prayers and was faithful to answer them. Something reminded Monty of a youth pastor from a Beoit missionary, Mike Spencer. He heard Mike had his own church downtown called Church of the Lamb, and we started going. More answers came, and we learned of kind of a growing renaissance in contemporary Christian circles. Vanessa and I came, the young couple, expecting a baby. It's my hope that the foundation is laid for Simon as he grows into his own spiritual consciousness. Perhaps an extension of his faithful answer to the prayer of some of my vineyard friends offered 20 years ago.
God has been truly kind to me. Forgive me, I also have a cold this morning. My children gave it to me. God has been truly very, very kind to me. And looking back, I'd have to say that these words and these are the events that saved and shaped me. I don't know exactly how old I was, somewhere between the second and third grade. And I know only that because I needed glasses at the time, and I didn't have any. And I didn't get those till I was in the fourth grade. And being one of nine children, that aspect sometimes gets overlooked. But my family and I were watching what I think was an old Cecil B. DeMille film, and it was the crucifixion scene. I don't know how I knew, but I knew as I watched that I was responsible for that, that I caused that I did that. But it was Christ's final words, "It is finished," that completely caught me up short. They confused me. I thought, finished. Nothing is finished. Nothing stays done. Nothing in my world or in my home stayed finished. And I could not understand the idea of that. You see, my mother was a very unhealthy woman who needed help. And she could be very cruel and very destructive. It was not uncommon for my nine siblings and I to come home, after school, to a house where every dish was broken, furniture ripped apart, precious food wasted, and chaos wherever you looked. And all this destruction did little to assuage her anger. She was just getting started. And she was spoiling for a fight. She even twisted the good and the best of what is true into something totally unrecognizable and just a terrible nightmare. She would demand that you came before her saying that she had something special for you. And with both her right and her left hand, she'd deal a horrible blow, saying, "This one's for St. Peter. And this one's from St. Paul." And I remember reeling back once thinking, geez, I didn't even know these guys knew me. And as difficult as it was to meet my mother and stand toe to toe with her and deny her access to my siblings, whatever it took, either by distraction, shouting her down, or taking whatever she met it out, whatever it took. But I need to tell you and be honest that as difficult as this was, it was nothing compared to the sorrow that my father had to endure. You could see it in his eyes when he returned from his long business trips that this destructive state meant that the therapy that once held so much promise, the new medicine, the new cutting-edge advancement, had failed. See, my father's primary goal was to restore my mother. And he very nearly bankrupted everything more than once in that effort. He was a really good man. He searched the globe. And that care is expensive. And with 9 children, I don't know how he did it. And so he would start over. He'd research the next promising cure and begin cleaning it all up, replace the furniture, stock the refrigerator and shelves that were empty, sweep up the glass, and coax repairmen and meter readers, telling them it was safe to come back to our house. No one wanted to come to our house. And I loved my father. And although he was not a Christian, he set me on a healthier path for my future. You see, he told me that I should forgive my mother, for she was doing the best that she could. And though I questioned the best she could portion, I took the wisdom of forgiveness. And it was my aunt, a charismatic, born again, probably a snake handler Christian, who also played an important role in my life. She lived in Texas, and she would call on Sundays when the rates were down. She did this as often as she could. We had at that time one of those wall-mounted telephones in our kitchen, next to our washer and dryer. And I loved talking to her. I listened mostly, and I would climb up on the dryer when it was cold and the kitchen windows were broken. And I would turn on that dryer again and again. To stay warm. I loved her southern drawl, and she would tell me what I needed to hear most, and that what was going on in my home wasn't right, and that Jesus loved me. She didn't make promises she couldn't keep. She would promise to jump into the car and take us all away with her, because that would have been impossible. My parents' marriage finally disintegrated when I was in high school, and my father petitioned Rome, the Catholic Church, for an annulment, but he was denied. And he finally accepted excommunication as a means to keep his children safe and piece together some sort of life. At 16, I became my mother's legal guardian. And my first job was to institutionalize her. Looking back, I don't know how we survived except by the grace of God. And as for as long as I can remember, my father battled another foe, cancer. It began in his colon and it metastasized throughout his body until finally no doctors could figure out what in thunder was keeping him alive. But he would tell them, he'd say, I have 9 children at home. He passed away before he even turned 56. And I don't know, but what do you say to your children when you won't be there for their milestone events, like grade school graduations? That's how young some of them were in high school graduations, weddings, first grandchildren. What do you leave with them so that they know how to deal with things when it gets really tough and you're not there? I would say that what I'm about to read to you are just some of the very best. My father gave to each of us a pewter cup, and each of us had our names engraved on them, and written within is a note that he gave each of us. And it begins with, "My Elizabeth, I give you this personalized cup with my blessings. I chose pewter, for though it is soft enough to be marred by rough treatment and molded by loving hands, it is strong enough and durable enough to last forever." And this is my wish for you, that you would be soft and loving, but strong and durable. Use this and remember me. God is so kind, for my dad accepted Christ just a few short weeks before he passed away. He finally understood that with Jesus, we can bear to look within and not be so consumed with self-loathing as my father was. Is not God kind? I still struggle to this day. I'm 58 years old. And if I'm not careful, I have days when I remember more of what my mother did and what my mother said. And quite honestly, most days I feel ill-prepared. I don't make many vows, but I vowed to him that if he would allow me to have a family, I would do things so differently than my mom, that I would pour myself into them. Besides the vow of marriage, that's the vow that is also nearest and dearest to me. I get to be a wife and a mother. God has been and continues to be so very kind to the children of John and Emily. A few of my siblings have even accepted the truths of the gospel. And for my unsaved brothers and sisters, each day that passes is a gift because he continues to woo them. Just 3 simple words, "It is finished," put me on an eventual path that led to Jesus Christ. And the gratitude that I have for my aunt and my father is a debt that I can never repay.
Philip, our son, gave me a book recently. It's a wonderful book. It's called Destiny of a Republic, and I think you'd love it. But one quote that is in there was just a lovely quote. I read this, and it's by James Garfield. Garfield was born into abject poverty, and he eventually became president of the United States, as you know. Garfield said this, "I never met a ragged child in the street without feeling that I may owe him a salute, for I know not what possibilities may be buttoned up under his coat." You and I know that the truths of our faith allow us to see individuals, children, and adults as equals and worthy vessels. We each know that we're also that ragged child. Each of us is broken in some way. And you and I know that God doesn't need our acts of kindness, but our fellow man does. I struggled as I wrote this because I didn't know how to end it. And then Thomas came in the room and he said, tell him you're grateful that you are never have to get another yellow sheet. And so by doing this, I've completed that. And I don't know who else said this, but that we think of it kind of like a case of the chicken pox, right? You know, you just, once you're done, And I was driving here and I thought, what if Wendell hears about shingles?
Hard to top that one. Many hands make the load light, Mother would tell us with a strict yet calm tone. I never really got the significance of this saying. Almost every day, my mom would speak these words with the same sort of tone and would present herself in the same sort of way. And the more I heard it, the more it entered through one ear and exited out the other. I've always respected my mom. Of course, there are times when a mother and son do not get along very well, usually because of the stubborn son. But every day I would strive to be the loving little Jakey my mom knew me to be. I've always loved my mom, through thick and thin. She was always there for me in desperate needs of comfort, and always right behind me when I needed a good butt-whooping. I remember one night, I lay in my bed tossing and turning, hurting because of the flu that I'd obtained. Mom and Dad's room is right across the upstairs hall from my own. My mom could hear my tossing and turning. She entered my room and knelt next to me. I cannot remember all the details, but she comforted me with her soft, soothing words and recited one of her favorite Bible verses. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he make his face to shine upon you and give you peace all the days of your life. Yes, this is, by the way, in the book of Numbers, and she actually did this too. Every time I was feeling sick, she'd come to my room and sing this song. Although there were plenty of times when my mom would soothe me and comfort me, I also had my fair share of spankings. In the year of 2006, the whole family was getting ready to leave for church on a Sunday morning. Now, understand that I was an immature little kid back then, and lacked much self-discipline. All my siblings were excited to get there and participate in all the Sunday school activities. I, on the other hand, was quite far from exuberant. In fact, I decided to stay home. And since our family size exceeded the "remember my child's name, Max," it was quite easy to slip under both my mom and dad's radar. Or so I thought. That particular Sunday, my mom also decided to stay home from church and catch up on housework. Out of all the places I could have hidden, the attic, the backyard shed, any place similar to that, I chose to hide in my sister's closet. And to make my day even better, my mom happened to waltz right into the room. Trying my best to disappear, she found me. She said with a strong and very serious tone, "Jacob Allen, what are you doing? Why aren't you with the rest of the family?" I kept silent. "You know what this means." And yes, I did. After my rear end received the "what this means," the rest of the day went on smoothly. Granted, she grounded me to my room for the entire day, but being the kind mother that she is, she brought my meals up to me and helped me catch up on homework. Now, there have been many challenges in my life, like getting along with family members, going from being homeschooled in the comfort of home to transitioning to a charter school atmosphere. But one in particular has affected me tremendously in the way I conduct myself and the way I live my life. Losing my mother. Catherine Collette Green was born on December 3rd, 1957. She grew up in Muncie, Indiana, with her 7 siblings. Now, I don't know much about my mom's childhood, but I know she married my dad. And out of their unconditional love for one another, there came 7 little children, the most important being yours truly. Just joking. All of us kids loved and adored her. She homeschooled all of us, and along with my dad, had a propensity to raise them to love and follow Christ and accept him as their Lord and Savior. Nothing pleased her more than to see her children strive to be Christ-like ambassadors and grow and mature with the Holy Spirit. There are a lot of attributes that define my mother. Some of those attributes include humility, kindness, lovingness, uprightness, respect, and a bevy of other characteristics. She was slow to anger, quick to forgive, and bore a servant's heart. She had a knack for keeping things neat, spotless, and tidy. Every morning and night, she would inspect each of our rooms to make sure we are keeping it clean. If there were clothes on the ground, she would tell us to pick them up. If there was dust on our shelving units, she would tell us to clean them off. Rarely do we get away with messy rooms. After Mom passed away, there was and is a huge gap in our home. Mom was the one who stayed on top of the laundry. Mom made sure things were being picked up all around the house. Mom supervised getting the dishes done in a timely manner. Mom was the one to greet us at the door after school or work and ask us how our day went. Mom's not here anymore. She passed away peacefully on June 13th, 2014, with family gathered around her. Things are a little different at home now, or a lot different. Laundry started piling up, stuff started to collect around the house, dust started to gather, and the kitchen became a nightly mess. But most importantly, no one was there to ask us about our day. I felt the need to step up and be there for my family, caring for their needs and comforting them. I felt as if I needed to take on responsibility and make sure things were getting done at home. Before my mom passed, she taught me little things that ended up impacting me in big ways. One example is washing dishes. When we had our dish duty days, I didn't give my all. I didn't do them to the best of my ability. Now I recognize the value in doing a job fully and completely giving 100%. She also taught me bigger things. My mom had a sparkling personality that brightened the day of anyone who spoke to her or made conversation with her. Reflecting back on the way my mother lived and the way she expressed herself, I feel as if my personality has been sharpened in many ways. I have learned to be more compassionate, kind, loving, and humble towards others. While my mom was alive, I didn't see the behind the scenes, all the things that she did that impacted so many people in so many ways. But after she passed, I realized her contribution in this life, and I know now that if I can be half the godly person my mom was, I can be a positive influence on so many people to please her, and most importantly, to please Christ.
Well, thank you, Chris, Elizabeth, and Jake. These Body of Life Sundays, we have them a couple times a year, but I think they're really great opportunities to put into practice those exhortations we find in the New Testament about teaching one another, encouraging one another, admonishing one another, edifying each other, building each other up. And though that does take place informally outside the hour and a half that we meet on Sunday mornings, it's also great to have it take place during the hour and a half on a Sunday morning as well. So we do have kind of an embarrassment of riches here. We have a lot of people who are who just do really a great job with this. In fact, I can't think of a time we've done this now for several years. Everybody has just done a remarkable job, and I still have a long list of people who have not yet had the opportunity. So do expect to get one of those golden sheets of opportunities at any given notice. But thank you for those who shared today, and thank you for those who have shared in the past. And speaking of along the same line, Eric, I think you have prepared a few words to share about today's contemplative hymn. So I'll have you come forward at this time, and we'll benefit from your instruction as well. And if the musicians would like to come, that'd be great.